You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Everyone, welcome back to another edition of the Skating Penguin Network Mailbag. I am Garrett Behanna. Alongside me is Robbie Noggle and Snail, the holy triumvirate that makes up the Skating Penguin Network. And, well, we have some questions, as we always do, as we record this mailbag on Monday evenings in our typical time slot here. Let's not waste any more time, and let's get into some of these questions. Loyal question asker Brian is here. Robbie, you're question number one this week, and we are getting our weekly food question right out of the way. Sort of coincides with the candy draft we did a couple of weeks back for Halloween. Robbie, are you a left Twix or a right Twix person?
I am whatever Twix is in front of me. I'm left-handed. In most things, at least related to sports. So I guess I have to say I would choose left Twix if they were both in front of me. But primarily it is candy. It is one of my favorite candies. So I am basically whatever Twix is laying in front of me, whatever one is going to allow me to eat it the quickest, I will choose that Twix. But if I had to choose, I guess I would say left-handed because I do basically all sports left-handed, though I do things like write and eat right-handed. Anything involving in sports, and since this is a sport-based podcast, I will say, if I had to choose between the two, I will say I am left Twix. How about you guys? I think everybody has a preference in some way.
Just both simultaneously.
Yeah, just both. Yeah, both at the same time.
Yeah,
I'm left and right. I don't discriminate.
Farm
yeah,
animal.
That's fair. Yeah, I
don't, style. Just don't discriminate. Just two at a time. Yeah.
Double fist. I like that. I like that a lot.
All right, question number two from Kim Larson. If each of you could choose a Penguins logo for the center of the ice, which logo would you choose? You can choose from any logos in Penguins history. or you can also choose the one with the diagonal letters across the chest.
So I really like that jersey with the diagonal letters. I kind of call it like the Rangers like copycat one. That's a sharp looking jersey. But this is for the logo at did he say Center Ice? I think I love the Robo Pen from the 90s, like the 92 like to 99 or whatever. But I also do love their silly 1967, like their fat penguin with the scarf. It's just such a cool, like, I think they call it like I've heard it called like the Beer League logo. Do you guys, have you heard of that one? Anyways, I don't know. I'd go Robo Pen all the way. What about you guys? Do you guys have a preference on a Pens logo?
Here's what I will say. I don't really have a preference. I mean, if you surveyed a bunch of millennials, they'd probably say the Robo Penguin like Snail. But when the Penguins made the switch in 2016, I think it was, when they switched their color scheme from that light shade of gold back to what they call Pittsburgh gold now, before that, they were using a really light shade of what is known as Vegas gold, and that was basically the main color of their logo and part of the color scheme of their uniform. When they made that switch in 2016 and went back to what everyone was familiar with, that shade of yellow that you can see even in the background of Robbie and I's green screen here, that is the Penguins logo that I love the most. I love that darker shade of yellow. The logo, the skating penguin basically is what it's called.
The one so that's on your hat.
Yes, yes,
and
exactly.
Snail's hat, that logo.
Yes, so that is the one that I will always pick 10 times out of 10.
I mean, yeah, that's obviously a great answer, to solid answer. It matches the color scheme now. But if we're being honest, we want this logo.
You know what? He's right.
Want that logo. We want the logo behind me and Garrett on Center Ice just for one game. That would be the ultimate advertising. So Penguins, get on that. That's what we want. Remember a few years ago when they played outside of Philadelphia with the keystone that said PIT in the middle? I'd like that for like a run of alternate. I mean, again, it's not easy just to change the center logo in the middle of the season, obviously. But I think a keystone type logo, maybe with a big keystone with the skating penguin logo, not the network, the skating penguin that's on your guys' hats with the keystone behind it would be pretty baller as well. So, again, not a real logo, obviously, but if I had to pick one that's already in existence, it's definitely the standard one we see now. It's a classic. It matches the color scheme, and you can't go wrong with that logo. I'm sorry. You just can't go wrong with that logo.
No, that's a good one. Robbie, I'm a little shocked at that. I thought you were going to have some sort of take with some sort of retro throwback, but...
Not really. Like, it's not... It's just really hard for me to dislike the classic Penguins logo that we see on the ice now.
Fair enough. Well, let's move on here to question number 3 coming from our pal Kim Larson. And Kim asks, do you think the NHL should retire number 66... just like they retired the great ones, 99.
They sort of already have retired 66, albeit in an unofficial capacity. League-wide jersey retirements are kind of silly to me. I understand, like, from Jackie Robinson's perspective, the historical significance of Robinson breaking the color barrier in Major League Baseball. So I can understand why that number is retired. But as far as league-wide retirements go, Wayne Gretzky, yeah, like statistically the greatest player of all time, and the majority of those records will never be touched ever again. But should Mario Lemieux's number be retired a la Gretzky? I don't think so. You could definitely make the argument that Lemieux is better than Gretzky, and I would wager 8 or 9 out of 10 Penguins fans would probably say Lemieux in his prime was better than Wayne Gretzky. But to retire 66 league-wide, Yes, Lemieux made an impact in the NHL, and he was right up there with Gretzky in the 80s for the face of that league. But I don't know. It's just, it's weird to me. It's even weird thinking about it now that Wayne Gretzky for the Edmonton Oilers, granted he played for a couple of other teams besides the Oilers, but it's weird why his number is retired just because of, you know, the stats that he put up. It's not like Wayne Gretzky did anything that's like sort of superseded sports like Jackie Robinson did. So I'm not for league-wide jersey retirements. Like I said at the start, it's sort of unofficially already league-wide retired. I don't think equipment managers are going to go out and give an 18-year-old who comes into the NHL a number 66. Islanders prospect Josh Ho-Sang had sort of ruffled some feathers 5 or 6 years ago when he came up to the NHL trying to wear number 66, and everyone made a big hubbaloo about him wearing 66. So again, in an unofficial capacity, it's basically already retired league-wide, and I think to put a bow on this question, that's how it should stay for the remainder of time. Question number four, as we go back to Robbie, as we get this question in from Kim Larson. Here's an interesting question. Robbie, what's the worst sport, the absolute worst sport you have ever watched or heard of?
That's worst, the worst sport I've ever watched or heard of. So I'm the kind of person that I can watch just about any sport and at least give it a shot. So the worst I've watched, I have zero understanding of cricket. Absolutely no idea how the sport works. I've tried to learn it, and the scoring is just completely weird. Again, it is an insanely popular sport. So I can't really say cricket though, because like if I understood it, I think I'd like it because there is a lot of action in it. And not to make the horse people mad, I have to say, just because I've watched it during the Olympics and it's anything dealing with equestrian, it is just, it's horse dancing, guys. And again, I'm sure it takes a lot of talent. Don't get me wrong. It's a lot of talent, a lot of coordination, a lot of working with a four-legged animal that you have to teach to do all this stuff. I cannot watch it. It is mind-numbingly boring to me. Again, all credit to those who do it. You've accomplished more sporting-wise than I have or ever will, so props for that. But to sit down and watch it, just not my jam. Sorry to the horse people. Just not my jam. I can't do it. Can't do it. Question number five here, again from Kim Larson. So with Tristan Jarry, he either has a shutout or he concedes 4 or 5 goals. Do you think it's something mental with Jarry? Do you think he would benefit from a sports psychologist type coach?
No, but I certainly could sometimes after the games that he starts. No, with the athletes these days, they already have one. Like, it would be kind of silly to think that that's not. I mean, goalies are kind of an enigma in the NHL anyways, and those goalie coaches, I mean, it's all between the ears with goaltenders, you hear a lot. So I would guarantee that he already has one. But you know, the book, Jarry's not a rookie. Like, the book is out on Jarry. I think at this point in his career, he kind of is what he is, and he's streaky at times. But I will say this, though. It's not for a lack of effort. Like, Jarry battles, and I think that sometimes he's been susceptible to shaky play in front of him. And when you're hanging your goaltender out to dry at times, I think that I firmly believe that you're leaving him vulnerable to injury, when, especially with Jarry being somewhat of an unorthodox goaltender. He's kind of a positional guy, sort of like a Flurry light, I guess you would say. He hasn't had the career so far that Flurry had, but like, sometimes it looks like he's swimming in the net. He's making these unorthodox crazy saves, and I think that leaves you vulnerable to injury, which has been more of Jari's issue than I think anything mental. It's his ability to stay healthy. So anyways, yeah, he's not, you know, he's not massive in net. He's not like a Vasilevsky. He's not someone that just takes up the whole crease there. He's someone that needs to make saves. And I think that that's, you know, Jari's, he's one of those guys that will let in a stinker from time to time. And yeah, I don't think it's mental. I think it's just sometimes it's, he's just streaky. And I think that's just at this point, that's just who Jari kind of is. And we got him signed for 5 more years. So you hope that he stays healthy and you hope that he continues to battle. And maybe the team in front of him sort of helps him out there and doesn't make it. So he has to be a gymnast back there. Did any of you guys want to add anything to Jari and the mental coach?
I don't think a mental coach is really needed. Basically, I agree with everything Snail said. It's more of the physical concerns I have with Jari. And as Snail was sort of describing Jari, I kept thinking about tweets that I've seen over the last month from guys that I respect on the Penguins beat, like Josh Yoey, Jesse Marshall. And he is streaky. That is the real definition of Tristan Jari. For $5 million, look, I get it. Like, the Penguins were sort of backed up into a wall as far as the goalie market was concerned. You probably weren't going to get many players better than Tristan Jari out there unless you were going to go give a king's ransom for Connor Hellebuck, maybe. But who was out there besides Jari who was going to give you, you know, hopefully above average to sometimes all-star level play? I mean, he deservedly is a prior all-star in this league. So, you know, the parts of the resume are certainly less than stellar. But then you look at the prior all-star seasons he had and you go, you know what, when this guy's on, he can really help you steal games. And that's basically what you need in today's NHL. It's a luxury to have a Vasilevsky, a big bulky dude like Snail said, who takes up the majority of that crease and has become one of the best goaltenders of the modern era. But for the vast majority of these teams, you don't have that. You just need average goaltending. And for the Penguins, as top heavy as they are, who rely on their skill to try and outscore opponents, for the most part, if you can get average goaltending, I think you can go on a pretty nice, long, sustainable run, whether that's in the regular season or the postseason. Now, all of those things have not come together for the Penguins because of injury, bad luck, or what have you. But that's the goal, to get to the postseason and just get average play from Tristan Jari. Jari does not have to be the second coming of Marc-Andre Fleury. He just needs to be average to maybe above average, and I think you can win with that.
Yeah, and one thing you got to admire about Jari is, and I would think that this kind of, this doesn't really have anything to do with Kim's question, but I've been known to be hard on him at times. I think the Penguins fans as a whole have been hard on Jari at times, but that dude lays it all out there. Like, that dude, he's a battler. His body language shows it. He's not someone that seems to sulk around, and I appreciate that a lot about Jari. So as far as Kim's question, I'm sure he's got the mental health side handled. It's just a matter of staying physically healthy for a guy like Jari. Let's see here. Question number 6 coming from Andreas Castle, and he asks, it's a soccer question. Do you know any German soccer clubs or German soccer players?
So, hello from our German friend Andreas Castle. This is an interesting question because my soccer fandom, or my football fandom for those listening in Europe, sort of started back in 2016 or 2017. Nobody in my family watched soccer. It was just kind of something that I wanted to pick up on my own. So the first thing I did was I downloaded a demo of FIFA 17 on my PC. And there were like 6 teams you choose from. And the first team that I saw was Manchester City. The first player that I saw was a German player by the name of Leroy Sané, who at the time was a winger for Manchester City. And he was an incredibly explosive, really pacey winger. At the time of this, when I was playing this demo, FIFA 17, he had really, really puffy, bushy hair, almost like an afro. And I was like, wow, that dude has some crazy hair. I don't know. One thing led to another, and I ended up becoming a supporter of Manchester City. But it was basically because of the way Leroy Sané looked on FIFA 17 that I was like, yeah, you know what? I'll give this team a try. But as far as German clubs, I don't really follow the Bundesliga as much as I follow the Premier League. Basically, if Bayern Munich aren't dominating the Bundesliga, then pretty much something is pretty much wrong with the Bundesliga. I think Bayer Leverkusen is top of the Bundesliga right now. Yeah, Leverkusen has 31 points. Bayern is in second with 29 points. So, again, I don't want to say the Bundesliga is a one-team league, but Bayern, out of everyone in that league, has the most money to spend. So if you're a Bayern fan, Andreas, I don't know if you are a Bayern fan, but if you're a Bayern Munich fan, hey, yeah, you're living the good life, because they're winning the Bundesliga basically every year. They're in Champions League every single year. They're always going to have a good chance to probably win the Champions League too, as far as European competition is concerned. So it's Bayern Munich or bust as far as the Bundesliga and I am concerned. So we are going to switch gears now and go into last week's mailbag. And Robbie, you can pick one of the questions from last week's mailbag, your favorite question that piques your interest, and give it an answer.
All right. So kind of going through these questions. So we had to kind of switch it up a little bit, just a little too much going on last week. So which is a good one here. Okay. This is from Kim Larson. If you could choose a job in the Penguins organization, what would it be? President, coach, assistant coach, GM, assistant GM, scout, material guy, video coach, or someone else? A lot of good options here. I'm assuming Kyle Dubas will be there. I work under Kyle Dubas. I'd like to work as an assistant GM. I'd like to work in the front office type of role, learning from a guy like Kyle Dubas how it all works in and out of on the ice and off the ice, traveling with the team, getting to go everywhere. And yeah, there's definitely a high pace, high pressure, but getting into that run to front office type role, getting into the nitty gritty of contracts and the player development and recalls and trades and drafting, I think would be a really cool place to be. And so I'm going to say assistant GM for this question. And since this is kind of a roundtable question, I'll also pass this off to Snail and Garrett to get their opinions on what role within a hockey organization they would enjoy being a part of.
That's easy for me. Maybe it's not that easy. First thing that came to head was to my head was a scout. I would look, dude, if my life and job was dedicated to going to like junior rinks, like in Canada or even in my neck of the woods. Actually, I don't know. I'm kind of over Washington I've watched the WHL here for my whole life. But if I could go to like college rinks or junior rinks and just kind of travel around and I don't know, have my little notepad and take notes on prospects and players, like that would fulfill me quite a bit, actually. That sounds like pretty fun to me. And if it wasn't something in that capacity, the only thing though is I'm kind of lazy and I kind of at this point in my life hate traveling. So I don't know if that truly adds up. Like I'm kind of a homebody now. But I don't know if Dubas came calling, I don't know, equipment manager would be sick too. I could really buy into that job, I think. So I'd say either a scout or equipment manager. What about you, G?
So I was thinking about this, and it took, as you guys were giving your answers, it took me a while to try and laser in on something that I wanted to do. And I came up with my answer while Snail was talking. What I would do, if anyone listening is familiar with the Penguins website or their social media presence, then odds are you've seen the Twitter account Penguins Inside Scoop, who is currently led by Michelle Crecchiolo, basically the Penguins team writer. She is absolutely lovely, just a lovely human being. And she works for the organization. She is paid by the organization, basically as the team writer, basically puts out content for Penguins.com and Twitter and Facebook and what have you. I would love to work with Michelle, under Michelle, and sort of capture the story of the Penguins during the season. Really, you're basically a member of that team. You're traveling with them on a daily or nightly basis from city to city, sort of trying to get the pulse on this team through the peaks and the valleys. And I think Michelle does an incredible job covering the team in that regard. So working in their digital / communications department would definitely be up my alley personally and professionally. So I think working as one of the team writers would definitely be my answer there. Snail, we're going to move it over to you. What question piques your interest from last week's mailbag?
All right, I'm going to ask you to bear with me here because I was kind of too, but I have a question for you, Garrett, and that's this is a question from Tony Gale. He asked, have you seen Ice Guardians?
I have not. I remember Tony asking this question last week. I have not seen it. I was curious if either of you had seen it because I had not.
Oh, I have. I think it's a great, as somebody who likes maybe a more of an old school brand of hockey, I think that that Ice Guardians was a tremendously done documentary, not docuseries. It is a movie. So I would encourage, I wanted to ask Garrett this specifically because we've kind of butted heads on the, I think we actually kind of see eye to eye somewhat on the enforcer role, but maybe the overall physicality aspect of hockey. I think that I would encourage someone like Garrett, to watch this and just give it, it's really not that long. It's not a huge commitment. I think that, it was made in 2016, and I think that it's, even since 2016, which some I forget, that's like 6 years ago, 7 years ago now, it's already less relevant than it is in today's game. But I would, the things they talk about with CTE and concussions and all of that, some interesting information in there. I'd encourage Garrett. Robbie, have you seen it? You have? What do you think? What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think especially in the time with, how much focus there is on the brain and the effects of the enforcer type players, like the long term effects of what we've seen, not just in hockey but in a lot of sports as well. I think it definitely did a good job hitting on the brain injuries, the long lasting effects of that. And yeah, I mean, if you have time, I'd definitely sit down. Take a look at it, because I definitely think it definitely pulls the curtain back on that in a way that you don't really see. Yeah, you can talk about it all the time, but hearing it from players that have gone through it or families that have suffered through it, I found it to be pretty enlightening that way.
Enlightening regarding the medical side of it and what they're learning about not just the sport of hockey as a whole, but actually the role that maybe fighting does or doesn't play in these traumatic brain injuries and whatever. But also just the firsthand accounts of players like back in the day, like Kelly Chase and Brett Hull's in it. Brett Hull's a guy who didn't really fight ever. He was a skill guy. And I don't know, just hearing some of these people that took on these roles. There's a couple of players in them that graduated from Princeton, you know, very smart guys, skilled guys. But in the NHL, they just couldn't really find a role and they ended up having to take that role on. It's interesting. And I think that I've seen it and I loved it. I'll watch it again, probably just at some point, maybe in the doldrums of the season. But Garrett, I would be super curious for you to watch it and see what you think after the fact.
Is it on like YouTube? Is it on a streaming service?
Free on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Yeah, I don't have Prime myself, but my brother-in-law does, so I will definitely have to write that down and check that out. Both of you sound like you're giving endorsements to it. So, and I think Tony Gale asked this question. Yeah, so it sounds like he was in favor of the documentary as well. So I'm getting three yeses here between you two and Tony. So I'm going to have to check this out.
It's not goofy. It's very well done. It's like not, it's not, and it's, I think when, before I watched it, I had the idea that this was like maybe a movie you watch before you go out and you're trying to get amped up, like you want to run through a wall. Not the case. It's very, it's got a lot of information in it. That's super good. It's not just some, it's not Don Cherry hits or whatever, that old hockey movie or the series he used to put out where it's dudes just killing each other. It's not like that whatsoever. So anyways, thanks for entertaining that, Garrett. But the real question that I wanted to get to here was from I believe he's our German pal, Andreas Castle. Mm-hmm. And he asks, do you guys have something that you collect? And I figured we could, you know, briefly roundtable this. I collect a lot of different stuff. Not, I don't collect baseball cards or anything really, but I'm a sucker for old hockey equipment, kind of random niche equipment. I like to use two-piece sticks still every once in a while. So, you can't really see behind me right now, but I got a small collection of beer signs, like tavern-esque beer signs. And, I've been skateboarding for a really long time and I have a love and affection for 90s skateboarding. So I have some, reissued 90s decks on my wall and stuff like that. So anyways, I'll pass that off to you fellas now.
Robbie, do you want to go first?
Yeah, so one thing that I collect like playing cards. They come in, I mean, you can get basically any movie, book, video game interest in the world in playing cards. I do have some. Yeah, let's see what I have here right now. This one came out this year. It's actually a Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers. Mm-hmm. Kind of, yeah, it's there. You see it. It was actually a Kickstarter one. They did a fellowship last year, I believe, and I'm assuming next year. They haven't said anything for sure yet. They'll do Return of the King, but yeah, I collect basically luxury playing cards is what they're called. They come from there's websites, there's like small little shops that do it. Bicycle, who, if you are familiar with playing cards at all, Bicycle is the big American brand that creates most of the playing cards you see. I have cards from like used cards from casinos in Vegas and stuff like that from when I was out there that have been like, they're out of circulation. They're cut up in a certain way, so they know not to use them. But no, I got into the luxury playing cards probably about 10 years ago. And that's kind of what my niche is at the moment.
Are you a card player? Do you like poker and whatnot?
Yeah, I don't play much, but I mean, I know how to play and I do enjoy playing. So, yeah, if I have friends to play with, I'll definitely play. I don't go to like casinos or stuff like on my own to play or anything like that.
What's the most amount of money you've lost in a card game?
I lost about $100 in about 5 minutes at the Monte Carlo playing blackjack in Vegas. So.
With that Pensburg money, that's chump change.
That's chump. That was before Pensburg, so I can't even say that was the Pensburg money. Unfortunately, that was in 2015. That was about 2 years before, or no, about a year before I started Pensburg. So, unfortunately, I can't say that I just threw away the Vox money there. That was unfortunately not it.
I love that Snail continuously thinks that, like. Jokingly, of course, but Snail thinks that we basically just Pensburg is we're making millions off of Pensburg revenue, page views, clicks, advertising revenue off of Pensburg. So
a percentage of the Penguins salary cap goes to you guys, yes, isn't it?
Yeah,
that would be nice. I mean,
a percentage of what is it? What's the cap right now? 85, 80, 87? Percentage of 87 million? No. Something like that. Yeah, I'll take a percentage of that.
Yeah, you give me just 1% of that, and I'd be happy.
Yeah.
What do you collect, Garrett?
I have. So you both gave your answers before I did. I am trying to think. I don't like readily collect
anything.
Don't
lie either.
I mean, to my right here, I have a quote unquote vinyl collection, but it's not. Okay. You know, it's not. I don't go out of my way to collect like high priced. Auction level vinyls. You know, I just buy vinyls of the bands that I like.
It's just a vessel to play the music on, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Why don't you rattle off a few of your vinyls you got there for us so we can get a peek into what you're spinning on the weekends?
Okay, let me Let me move my microphone here. I don't want to make any unnecessary noise. Let me see.
He just doesn't want to say Playboys.
Oh, please.
70s Playboys, too.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. The green screen here.
Yeah.
This is Blink-182's newest record, One More Time, that I...
Oh, shocker. That's first.
I bought this record, like... last August, before any details. I bought this record even before I knew what any of the music was going to be on that album. Let me see what else I can pull out here. A lot of it is Blink related discography. Let me see.
Angels and Airwaves, Boxcar Racer.
I do have the Boxcar Racer. I do have Boxcar Racer right here. What I don't have is I don't have a lot of Angels and Airwaves vinyls, because a lot of those vinyls, those albums came out at least a decade ago, and the repressings are super expensive at the moment. So I don't have a lot of Angels and Airwaves. Let me see if I can find... There's a pop punk band I really like called No Pressure. It's sort of in the vein of Blink 182.
Yeah, that's what's his name's, who the main guy from that. He's from another famous band, right?
Yeah. Parker Cannon, I think.
Parker Cannon, that's right. Yeah. I like them too. They're a great band.
So I have their vinyl. I have a couple Beatles records. What else I do have? I have a couple of John Williams Star Wars records.
I do have some Star Wars records myself.
That's something that a lot of people don't know about me, is that I really enjoy film and orchestral music. And oftentimes when I'm working, I work from home, I'll put on just some John Williams and I'll just work to John Williams for a couple of hours. And I really enjoy it. So
Jared, if I guess, blasting Mozart.
Yeah. These are the things you don't know. Robbie and I have known each other for years and I'm just now opening up to him.
Yeah.
So if you're you don't collect anything Star Wars then? Like, do you have like figurines, or like how many lightsabers do you have?
I don't know if I have a single lightsaber. I mean, when I was a kid, my mom would buy like the plastic lightsabers from Walmart.
Have a single lightsaber.
But speaking of Star Wars memorabilia, I'm looking around my room. I mean, again, I don't collect Star Wars memorabilia, but I've accumulated a lot of it over the years.
Life-size blow-up doll of Princess Leia in the gold bikini.
Jabba's slave Leia. Yeah, the slave Leia. You can't see that, actually. It's behind my bed. I take it off.
Oh, yeah.
It's tucked away for now.
I use that only for special occasions on the weekends. I have a bunch of random Star Wars knickknacks and paddywhacks and giving dogs a bone and whatnot. I'm just looking around my room. I don't have like autographs or anything like that. Those autographs are expensive as hell. Like, to get an autograph of Harrison Ford or Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, even George Lucas. I've wanted a long time. I wanted to get a George Lucas autograph signature, just a signature. And a lot of that stuff is super expensive because collectors go crazy for that sort of stuff.
Is George Lucas still alive?
Yeah, he's still kicking.
Yeah. So is John Williams, and he's like almost 100. So
I saw John Williams in concert for the first time in my life. That was a bucket list item. Last April, he came to Heinz Hall in Pittsburgh.
Mm.
And, like you said, Robbie, he's like 90-something years old.
Yeah, like mid-90s almost.
So I'm thinking, oh God, I hope his health is just there. Yeah. In a selfish way, I'm like, I really want to see John Williams, and I hope his health holds up so I can see him. I don't know how he does it, man. He's like you said, in his like early to mid 90s, and he's still conducting orchestras. Like, it's wild.
Yeah, I give him credit, that's for sure.
So yeah, that's basically in terms of collections. Yeah, I think it comes back to me. I think I take question number 9 here. And then we'll wrap up the mailbag. Question I have. Here's a fun one that we can round table and we'll wrap up the mailbag. This question comes from Kim Larson. What number looks best on a hockey jersey? Kim likes number 93 and remembers when Peter Nedved wore it while he was in Pittsburgh. So, you know what? I don't know if I have... If I played professional sports like hockey or baseball, the number that I always wanted to go with was 56 because it was just my birthday. May 6 is my birthday. So I would just be basic and go 5-6. And that's probably what I would still do if I was playing hockey. I think 56 is a pretty, like, you could wear it as a center, as a winger, or as a defenseman. Not so much as a goalie, but yeah, so I'll go 56. Which one of you want to go first for your favorite hockey jersey number?
We need more odd goalie numbers like 56. And I remember Josh Tebow when he was in Pittsburgh was like 41 or something like that. We need like even 29 for Fleury. I mean, we got so used to it, but kind of a weird number too for a goalie. They're usually like 1 or 30, maybe 31, somewhere in there. As for me, like, I grew up a massive Kevin Stevens fan, so I'd have to say 25 just because I was a massive Kevin Stevens fan growing up. My number through playing baseball through high school and stuff was 14. So if I played in the NHL, I'd probably wear 14 just to keep that tradition alive. And I'm also a massive Roberto Clemente fan, so I'd also wear 21 if I had the option as well.
I like 91 and 81. I think that those like look good. And I also like how there's like when you see 91, you like think of players, right? Like I think of like Tavares and Stammer. 81, I don't know. There's actually not as many 81s as maybe I thought. I think of Phil. Phil Kessel is one of my favorite players. Phil Kessel's
the only person I think of. 81, yeah.
Yeah, I think those numbers like look good. But I think, and I think if I was playing right now, I would have, like I would vouch for 91 just because it's my birth year. 91, 29 also, my birthday is September 29, so probably one of 9, 29 or 91. But I also think those numbers like look good on a jersey too. What's another one? I like when people have kind of like the training camp numbers too, like that, like Radim Zahorna is like 67. I don't know, it's kind of, he's big though, it's noticeable. I don't know, 91, 81.
You know what else I like too? The fact that a player like Brock Besser, who's a forward, wearing a single digit number. You really don't see a lot of forwards wear single digits. And I think like that's just really sleek for some reason.
Dupuy was always one that stuck out to me. Dupuy always.
Yeah, you're right.
That was basically the only one that really kind of sticks out to me as a single digit wear of on a forward. On a forward, Ron Francis used to wear 9 when he was in Hartford and for briefly when he came to Pittsburgh until the number 10 freed up. So another one of the weird ones there. But single digits on forwards you do not see very often.
So I guess I just had this question kind of come up while you guys were talking. So we all know a player can make a number. Like there's examples of Gretzky, Lemieux, Sid with 87. Can a player break a number? Like, can a player sink a number to where people are like, oh God, I'm not wearing that number because so-and-so wore that? Or has there ever been a case of that you guys can call off the top of your head? Do you ever see a number and you're just like, bad juju on that number right there?
66, 68. 87 are probably the big three for me that stick out. Again, kind of at least 87's, I mean, it's kind of an oddball number. But 87's in that echelon now of numbers that will not be worn much outside of the guy that they're known for. I'm trying to think what else. Again, 68, I've seen that worn outside of Pittsburgh. But not by many that I can remember. And obviously, hopefully not too much more here after February. But synonymous, even in my mind, at least in Pittsburgh, 29 will always be synonymous with, and 58 as well will be synonymous with Marc-Andre Fleury and Chris Letang going forward. But as for like the whole league, 99, 87, 68, 66, and if it keeps going in the direction, I'd say 97 will be in that conversation as well in 10 or 15 years.
Boy, I'll tell you what, when you mentioned 97, This obviously isn't an Edmonton Oilers podcast by any stretch, but boy, how about those Oilers, man? Like, can it get any worse for Connor McDavid and everyone up there? Like,
I don't think so. I think that this, there is trouble afoot in Edmonton, and it's been for most of Connor's career. It's never been good for a long period of time. There's been fires to put out in Edmonton since he got drafted.
Every single year, there's nothing can go right for that team, and it really does. To bring it back to the Penguins here, it really does put it in perspective as a Penguins fan. That core of Fleury, Crosby, Letang, and Malkin won in 08-09 when they were still, how old? They were in the league for what, three-ish years at that point, 4 years at that point? And, you know, McDavid's what, 25 or 26? And he really, outside of what, maybe how many conference finals appearances does Edmonton have in the McDavid era? One?
How many finals?
No, two, I think. Conference finals? I think they had that one against Anaheim.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Was it against Anaheim? No, because Anaheim didn't go to the Stanley Cup that year. They made the second round. I remember they had like Maroon on their team way back, whatever year that would have been. And then
2016, I think.
So the only one would have been what against Colorado, right?
Yeah, they were completely in over their head in that series.
It just goes to show how fortunate, again, Penguins fans have been when it comes to championships, because, I mean, since he came into the league, geez, 6 years ago now, almost 7 years, you know, if my math is correct, he was labeled as the next one to the player to take that mantle from Sidney Crosby. And since he's come into the league, look, I know McDavid's legacy is not attached to Stanley Cups, but for a lot of people, rightly or wrongly, that is how elite players are judged, how many championships you win. And since McDavid has come into the league, Sidney Crosby has remained atop of that perch, winning multiple championships since then. Whereas McDavid has made a couple, if not just one, conference final appearance. Again, I'm not saying it's all on McDavid, because there are several issues at play. The Oilers have never had stable goaltending. Their defense has always been questionable. They've had a good cast around McDavid, especially in that top six with Dreisaitl, Nugent Hopkins, whoever else is still there. I don't know.
Hyman.
Yeah.
He was a good acquisition for them.
But, oh my goodness. You can change coaches. I mean, this is what, McDavid's fourth or fifth coach since he came into the league?
Dude, Nugent Hopkins has had like half of all of Oilers coaches in history. I saw that stat somewhere today, that he has been on the team for half of Oilers coaches in history, which is ridiculous. That's got to be weird mentally for a player, where it's like, oh, you're the new guy. Okay, my name's Ryan. I guess I'll go stand over here. Tell me where to go. Like, you've seen so many coaches come and go. I wanted to add quickly, dude, this didn't all start in Edmonton when McDavid got drafted. He was the golden goose that they got. In 2010, they drafted Taylor Hall first overall. 2011, they drafted Ryan Nugent Hopkins first overall. In 2012, they drafted Nail Yakupov first overall, three first overall picks in a row. And then they got the golden goose in McDavid in 2015. Not to mention they've had other high draft picks. I mean, Eberle was a high draft pick. He was a part of those early Oilers teams in this recent era. They wasted, third overall on Jesse Puljujarvi?
Yeah, he hasn't panned out.
Dude, this team has had opportunity. This team, by all means, and kind of bringing it back to the Penguins got Fleury. They got Sid, Gino, and they had good supporting. They used they drafted well in getting guys like early on, like Ryan Malone. They were careful with how they handled assets, and they built a contender that lasted a long time. Where's the excuse for Edmonton on having that many first overall picks? And Taylor Hall's not even there anymore. He's kind of traversed the league a bit. Nail Yakupov, he was out of the league a long time ago, too. Like, he was, and then Ryan Nugent Hopkins has been there, and then, of course, McDavid. And they hit the home run with Dreisaitl as well. And Chiarelli, of all people, got him on that kind of like, that I guess you could call it for right now, a very team friendly deal with how good Dreisaitl is. Anyways, Edmonton is low hanging fruit. But, like, just when you're kind of comparing it, that this is a Penguins podcast, when you're comparing how the Penguins insulated the golden goose that was Sidney Crosby and supported him and really kind of made it, it was kind of all about him. But again, it was like every Sid was, Sid kind of set the precedence with taking less money. I don't know. The Penguins just, you can really look back and be thankful for the way that the Penguins handled getting a guy like Sid and their other high draft picks. When you could look over at Edmonton and see the tire fire that's going on up in the prairies there in Alberta.
I couldn't put it better myself. I thought maybe a couple of seasons ago, McDavid would have put his foot down and said, get me out of Edmonton. That still might be the case. It's very rare for a player like that to publicly come out and say, I want traded out of here, especially in hockey, where a lot of that culture is like, guys are, you know, typically quiet and they're not going to create chaos for their own team or what have you. Maybe, you know, independently, McDavid thinks, what am I still doing at Edmonton? But again, that's a conversation for another day, for another podcast. Again, wild to see the success the Penguins have had parallel to Connor McDavid's career up to this point. We got on that conversation talking about number 97 jersey numbers. That is just ridiculous. But all right, fellas, for Snail, for Robbie, I have been Garrett Behanna. Thank you so much for listening to another edition of the Skating Penguin Network Mailbag.